The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I'm going to do everything I can to minimize Putin's price hike here at home. We understand Putin's war against the people of Ukraine is causing prices to rise.
People are already feeling Putin's price hikes at the pump.
Make no mistake, inflation is largely the fault of Putin.
If you look at the numbers, inflation really started to rise almost exactly when Biden came in the White House. Obviously,
well, that argues my point, doesn't it?
But look at this chart on gas prices just since February. If you look at it is a shocking increase. That,
and you know what? You can say what you want, but this would have never happened to Donald Trump. Never. No one was ever ignoring Donald Trump's calls. Yeah, because if you ignored Donald Trump's calls, you didn't know how he would respond. Maybe he'd send an angry tweet, or maybe he'd just like ban your country from everything. You don't know. That's why I bet in these situations, Biden actually wishes that he could hire Trump to step in as president wildcard, you know, just keep everyone on their toes. Because if Trump was calling, you best believe the UAE, they'd be racing to pick up the phone.
Okay, but if Putin thought Trump was really that supportive of him, why didn't he invade when Trump was in office? Putin. I mean, there's something very strange about Biden saying, you know, we're going to cut off Russian oil, but I'm going to go and beg Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, and Iran, the people who, like, a few weeks ago, we cut off and wouldn't buy their oil because they were the bad guy.
If you can't convince the sycophants, then you must be in some serious trouble. These are some prominent left-wingers, communists in the media, really, or in comedy, I guess, in the case of Trevor Noah. Someone tweeted out, by the way, after his remarks over the weekend, if you lose Trevor Noah, you know it's bad in the Biden presidency, what we know to be the illegitimate presidency, the current occupant of the White House. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can receive the live stream, the audio stream of this show on CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. But of course, to get to the live video stream, you've got to come to our website, thetrumpet.com, thetrumpet.com/live. That takes you right to the live stream page, also to our podcast that we post after the fact. If you'd like to catch up on your Trumpet Daily viewing on demand, well, as you can see, if you're watching the video stream, we're back in our beautiful studio here in Edmond, Oklahoma, after a long day of travel yesterday. Also, an exciting and enjoyable wedding that we got to participate in and to view on Sunday afternoon there at our Edstone campus. Great to conclude a very busy, fast-moving week of travel through Israel. Of course, you know, we spent a few days in Jerusalem and then flew into Birmingham Airport in the Midlands of the UK, and spent Friday evening, all day Saturday, and then, of course, most of Sunday at Edstone before then flying home last night. So forgive me if I'm a little groggy today, but we do have lots and lots of material to get through. So hopefully we can make some good progress, even though we're a little bit tired today. Speaking of the trip, during our Jerusalem visit, my father did mention a few times we were doing our best in the hotel room to try to keep up with some of the events happening in the news, particularly with Ukraine. And my father remarked a couple of times about how that when you step back and just look at this world from God's perspective and all that he has planned for the city of Jerusalem and the interest that we take in that city and the projects that we've had there over the years with excavations and our relationship with the late Dr. Alat Mazar and Hebrew University and the Israel Antiquities Authority and the Israel Exploration Society. We've had so many wonderful friendships and connections over the years, so many people that we've partnered with. And my father was pointing out how that all of this, Satan is a master at distraction. And he said that all of this going on with Russia and Ukraine, and of course the way the media are concentrating solely on that, they've completely forgot about COVID-19. I mean, don't get me wrong. We still have to take all the COVID tests. I think I took 5 last week just to get into Israel, to leave Israel, to get into Birmingham, to leave Birmingham. It's unbelievable how still 2 years in, we're just 15 days to stop the spread, right? Well, at the very least, at least with respect to media coverage, they've moved on. They've moved on beyond COVID-19. They've returned pretty much, I guess travel restrictions are about the last domino to fall. Because in the UK, I mean, it's pretty much returned to normal. You can see it in the Premier League games and such. In any event, at least it's fallen off the headlines. At least we don't have to hear Anthony Fauci sound bites every day. That's been nice. But then you look at the way that the story in Ukraine is being covered. And like my father said, it's just a massive distraction away from what God plans for Jerusalem. I mean, what's happening in Jerusalem is it represents real hope for the people of Ukraine. It represents real hope for the entire world. The city of Jerusalem, the city God has chosen. That's one of the titles that we have in our library here. My father completed that book just a couple years ago. Not even that, I think. The Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. My father concentrated on that all throughout that book and then again reminded us, those of us traveling with him last week, that really what's happening in Jerusalem is what's important. Ukraine is just a distraction. And, you know, it was interesting. He made that same point in a message on Saturday, the Sabbath. And then you had headlines coming out from Jerusalem, of all places, on that day. He was giving the message at Edstone. But then there were these reports that Jerusalem was actually going to get involved in the peace negotiations between Ukraine and Russia. We'll see how that pans out. But just remember, I gave you this scripture on Friday's show from the Edstone studio, Zechariah 12 and verse 3, where it says, "And in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people." It says, "All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces." You see, for the nations of this world, Jerusalem has been a heavy burden. As I said on Friday's show, I mean, rivers of blood have flowed through that city. And nations that get in there and try to take control of Jerusalem or maybe use it to call for peace between nations, it never does work, does it? It never does work. And that's because it's not in man to think and direct his steps, as Jeremiah 10 and verse 23 says. Or to continue with Jeremiah in chapter 17, it says about the human heart that it's deceitful above all things, desperately wicked. And so that's why man has been unable to bring peace to this earth. And here when my father's trying to give us, his traveling party, some perspective to get our focus on Jerusalem, to see it from God's perspective, to view world events from God's perspective. Well, here comes the devil and all of his diplomats saying that, hey, let's get together in Jerusalem and we'll make peace. We'll finally solve the problems of the world. In this case, the ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Well, how about that? What do you think will come out from this? This latest attempt by the diplomats, the peacemakers. What does your Bible say about those ambassadors of peace? Or those ambassadors for peace, that says they're going to, in the end, they're going to weep bitterly. Suddenly, right as my father's making these comments, suddenly here comes Israel, Naftali Bennett. He sees himself now as a peace negotiator. And wouldn't you know it, Germany's actually working behind the scenes on this as well. On Saturday, Volodymyr Zelensky, he called for Putin, that's the Ukrainian president, he called for Putin to meet him in Jerusalem. And the prime minister there, Prime Minister Bennett, has offered to mediate. Notice this report from Al Monitor. It says German Chancellor Olaf Scholz was the real instigator of the Ukraine-Russia mediation effort undertaken by Prime Minister Naftali Bennett last week, according to sources close to the Prime Minister. Well, this is interesting. Germany working together with Israel, of all places or all nations, to try to bring peace between Putin and the Ukrainians. It says here, Scholz complained to Bennett, that's the Israeli prime minister, both these leaders are relatively new to their positions. Scholz complained to Bennett that although Europe was experiencing one of the toughest wars in decades, and despite the explosive potential of a speedy deterioration, there are no mediators who will try to understand both sides and meet them to map out their differences and try to lower the flames. That was the advice that Scholz gave to the Israeli PM. It says the newly installed chancellor made a lightning visit to Israel March 3rd, and his chemistry with Bennett was immediately obvious. So you've got these leaders in Israel, and the nation of Israel in the Middle East, I should say, little Judah, and of course the German chancellor forming this strong bond. And we know about what happens when Israel or the Jewish state draws closer to Germany. Boy, you look at some of the things we've said. Of course, we could refer you to some of our own articles more recently, but he was right. Herbert Armstrong, all of these prophecies coming into play right at the, I'll get to that in just a second. There's an article I actually didn't get time to go through from Richard Stack over at Edstone. This is from Forbes magazine. And I'll just give you the title, Putin's Biggest Blunder, Energizing German Rearmament. That has been Putin's biggest miscalculation in all of this, is it's given Germany an excuse to militarize itself. And it has the approval, the hearty endorsement of every Western nation, incredibly. That's been the biggest blunder. So says Forbes. I mean, that's you could read that, and he was right, practically. As I've been saying, so many of these headlines. Tomorrow's news today. If you're not a Trumpet subscriber, I mean, even if you go back to the Trumpet, just in March, or the March edition, it was prepared or printed, I think, and distributed in February, before all of this outbreak of violence in Ukraine. And you have in the March, it's on the cover of the March issue, the rise of the German businesses or German industry. And now Putin goes into Ukraine and Germany. Olaf Scholz announces, hey, we're going to build up our military. You might have heard that with the feature story news items there at the top of the show. $100 billion or euros or whatever it is. And then 2% of its GDP every year. Forbes, Putin's biggest blunder, energizing German rearmament. I mean, that's prophecy being fulfilled. Amid all of this, too, you have this strengthening alliance between Russia and China, and quite a few of the commentators, the sharper ones, that said that Russia never would have gone on this venture into Ukraine were it not for the support and the alliance that it has with China. Here's an article from, Bloomberg. China considers buying stakes in Russian energy commodity firms. It says China's considering buying or increasing stakes in Russian energy and commodities companies such as, Gazprom, you're familiar with this if you've been reading the Trumpet for very long. But it says here, Beijing is in talks with its state-owned firms, including, and it lists all these firms, on any opportunities for potential investments in Russian companies or assets, the people said. It says any deal would be to bolster China's imports as it intensifies its focus on energy and food security. So you hear in the States, you hear a lot about, you know, Biden cutting off energy imports from Russia. But look at China and look at Europe. They're a lot more reliant on Russian oil than we are here in the United States. And I'll come to America here in just a second. But what happens when you have Russia strengthening its alliance with China and vice versa? And then you've got Germany cozying up to little Israel in the Middle East and also announcing that it's going to rearm itself militarily. Wow. Is this significant? These are thunderbolts. We heard a pretty loud one in Jerusalem, by the way, when we were meeting with Professor Garfinkel from the Hebrew University. Had never heard thunder like that in the city of Jerusalem. But it happened last Thursday night. There have been some thunderbolts like that in the figurative sense. My father saying, look, Ukraine's a distraction, really, for what God's work is doing in Jerusalem. It's a distraction. God has, the Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. As I say, this represents hope, real hope for Ukraine, for all of Europe, for Russia, for China. And of course, for those of us in the United States, Great Britain as well, the Israelite nations. You look at all of these events and these alliances forming, and then you see the United States. We have an article we're featuring at the Trumpet website just now. Biden turns to Venezuela for oil. Even Bill Maher, you heard in that opening montage, even he can't understand this. Here we're reaching out to Venezuela, to Iran, to Saudi Arabia. All of these nations that produce dirty oil. I mean, oil's produced in the United States. It's probably the cleanest in the United States. If they were serious about saving the environment, about not polluting the atmosphere, well, they drill more in, as I said last week, they drill more in North Dakota and Alaska. But to reach out to Venezuela? Yes, that's right. Makes perfect sense as far as the Joe Obama administration is concerned. You can't drill in the United States because, hey, it's all about the Green New Deal. We've got to transform everything fundamentally in the United States of America. But as a temporary stopgap so that voters don't get too upset about the skyrocketing gas prices. We tried to fill up our cars in the UK, by the way, Saturday night. And by my calculations, they go by liters and pounds, obviously, over there. But you're up to $9 a gallon. We were at a pretty expensive one because the one where the gas was cheaper, it was all sold out. No diesel. Most cars over there run on diesel. No diesel at Tesco. And so we go to the expensive one, and it's what, $9, maybe $10 per gallon. That's where it's headed in the United States. And so Joe Biden rises to save America by reaching out to these authoritarian states. It's unbelievable, as I say all the time. You cannot make this up. Listen to this from Joe Biden. I believe this is from Friday, clip 3.
We're on track right now. I'm on track to be the first president in history to lower the deficit by over $1 trillion in 1 year. So I'm sick of this stuff. We have to talk about it because the American people think the reason for inflation is government spending more money. Simply not true.
Just sick of it. He's pretty angry, in fact. We're not causing inflation. Nothing we do. There are no Joe Obama policies causing inflation. So says Joe Obama. Listen to Nancy Pelosi from last week as well. Clip 4.
So when we're having this discussion, it's important to dispel some of those who say, well, it's the government spending. No, it isn't. The government spending is doing the exact reverse, reducing the national debt. It is not inflationary.
Government spending, that's reducing the debt. Dream on. Dream on. These people are living in a fantasy world. We're spending another $1.5 trillion. I took you through the budget numbers, a few of them last week. $1.5 trillion more of waste. Quantitative easing. Just printing money or borrowing from China. Either way. I mean, these are policies that are crippling the United States. Hurting ordinary Americans. Even as the millionaires get up and say, hey, just buy the electric cars, come on. Or look, I'll pay $15 per gallon, says the millionaire comedian. Or the Hollywood actress, worth tens of millions of dollars. Hey, we've got to do it. We've got to pay for more gas. We've got to pay higher prices for gas to really send a message to Putin. Well, easy for the stars and the celebrities to say. Listen to this. This is a montage put together by Grabian about all of these these communist propagandists in the media complaining about rising gas prices. Well, what's to complain about? Just get an electric vehicle, an EV, as Buttigieg continually says. This is clip five.
The future of transportation is electric.
Gas prices have hit a new record high in America and expected to keep rising.
We need to make sure that it becomes relatively more attractive to have an electric vehicle instead of a gas
vehicle. You want gas prices to go up and oil prices to go up.
You need it to reflect the true cost of carbon.
Number one, no more subsidies for fossil fuel industry. No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period. Ends.
Record high gas prices, the national average now at $4.29 a gallon, a 60-cent hike in just 1 week.
The president is really focused on making sure that people are not hurt at the pump.
Several around L.A. that are more than $6 a gallon.
If you drive an electric car, this would not be affecting you, clearly.
There's no sound or fume.
How many barrels of oil does the U.S. consume per day?
I don't have that number in front of me.
So how do I know it's actually working?
What is the Granholm plan to increase oil production in America?
Oh my God, that is hilarious.
Perhaps if you let the market work in this respect, people will feel pain. They'll take a second look at that Ford F-450 gigantoid truck. They'll reconsider a Tesla.
I'm willing to pay $4 a gallon. Hell, I'll pay $15 a gallon because I drive a Tesla.
I have a Chevy Bolt. That is my car. I lease a Bolt and I lease solar panels. So I drive on sunshine, girl.
Record-breaking prices at the pump nationwide.
One of my favorite topics, electric school buses.
Electric school buses that have big batteries underneath it.
Yes, we are very excited about electric school buses.
Yeah, some prices are as high as $7 a gallon.
You usually can smell it and you can hear it. You can hear the guzzling sound.
People from rural to suburban to urban communities can all benefit from the gas savings of driving an EV.
Electric school buses with big batteries, of all things. There are these reports from a hearing. This is months before Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine. But it was a hearing before Democrats and Republicans, I think last August, when they had all these big shot oil executives. And the Democrats were asking them then, how are you going to reduce the barrel of oils that you're drilling for? You've got to dial it back. And then they come along and say, look, we've got some temporary stopgap measures here. We're going to bring those prices of fuel down. We're really trying to help you. We're going to Venezuela. This is, as I said last week, it's all part of the plan. It's all part of the attack. And there's Kamala Harris, the fake vice president, going on and on. You can't hear it. You can't smell it. There's no fumes. There was a tweet, by the way, of a Tesla. I think it was a repair vehicle. A Tesla vehicle that was at a gas station fueling up. Now, Elon Musk has had some pretty good comments in recent weeks. Even he says we should be drilling more in the United States. He produces the electric cars. But that one picture says it all. The Tesla repair truck out on a mission, fueling up at a gas station. Not getting the electric pump, but getting the gas. Fueling up. These people, all of them, hypocrites. It's our let them eat cake moment coming from, brought to you by Kamala Harris. Why not get an electric car, you stooge? Nobody can afford one, that's why. And now they can't afford $7, $8, $9 per gallon gas prices either. It's worse than crippling the United States. It's destroying America's economy. And you see the spike just since Joe Biden stole the presidency. But as Peter Schiff, the economist, points out, this goes back years. I mean, it really took off in 2008, 2009 with Barack Obama coming into office. And here's where we are. Listen to this from Peter Schiff. This is clip 11.
So now we're finally seeing the impact on consumer prices of the inflation that the Federal Reserve has unleashed. And all of the people who initially said that QE wouldn't cause inflation don't understand this. They have no idea why this is happening. They're still convinced that QE doesn't cause inflation because they're looking back at QE 1, 2, and 3, and they didn't see any immediate inflation as a consequence of that. And so they think, well, QE doesn't cause inflation. And so what's happening right now has absolutely nothing to do with quantitative easing. It must have something to do with COVID-19, or it must have something to do with Russia or greedy corporations, price gouging. It's got nothing to do with any of that. Inflation is and always has been a monetary phenomena. Even Milton Friedman knew that. Everybody should know that, which is why it's so amazing that so few people in academia or on Wall Street are willing to acknowledge what should be obvious, that all this inflation is made in America. In fact, it's one of the few things that's still made in America is inflation, and we're going to make a lot more of it, especially if we don't acknowledge the cause.
Made in America, that's right. You get by, QE1 comes along. Okay, everything's still held together. Okay, so then you get on to the second, the third, the fourth phase. Quantitative easing. That's just basically spend trillions and then print it off. Print off the money. It'll always be available. And then you try to tell them, look, you're causing the dollar and what it's worth to just collapse. It's becoming worthless because of you and your policies. You try to tell them that, the communists that is, and they get angry. Just like Joe Biden, he gets angry. Don't you dare say that my policies are causing inflation. Nancy Pelosi, for her part, says the more we spend, the more we're reducing the deficit, the more we're helping the economy. They've been saying this, as you know, if you're a regular viewer, they have been saying this for years. The more we spend, the more we spend, the more we save. The more we spend, the more we reduce the deficit. The more we spend, the more we help to reduce the inflation numbers. Fantasy land. The reality? Well, there's a few. There's not enough, but there's a few, even in the communist propagandists in the media, that are pointing out the obvious. Here's Donald Trump, for his part, pointing out the obvious at his South Carolina rally on Saturday, clip 7.
You could take the five worst presidents in American history and put them together, and they would not have done the damage Joe Biden has done in just 13 months. We have a president representing our country at the most important time in history who is physically and mentally challenged. The Russian invasion of Ukraine is a terrible atrocity that should never have been allowed to happen. It would have never happened. Make no mistake, however, that Russia would not have dared to annex one inch of territory if I was in the White House.
He's completely right, of course. And as we well know, America is under attack. It's under attack from these communist forces. And we've been ahead of the curve on that, to say the least. My father says in the booklet, the devil, who comes as an angel of light, is using his powers of deceit and intimidation to get a stranglehold on this nation. He's got a stranglehold on the United States, even as you see these prophetic alliances taking form. Kings of the East, the King of the North. This morning in doctrines class, I talked about, well, how the devil comes as this angel of light, like my father says. He comes with smooth words, but you've got to look at the fruits or the results of the actions that are being taken. We'll look at that more when we come back after this break. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the program, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
So back to this quote from America Under Attack. My father talking here about the devil coming as an angel of light, coming with smooth words. And this is what so many people prefer. Isaiah 30, of course, brings out that prophecy about that's what they ask of prophets or teachers, those who say they're teachers from God. The people want smooth things. 2 Timothy 4 brings out the same. And Paul said to Timothy, look, you've got to be bold enough, courageous enough to speak the truth, even when people don't want to hear it. Daniel 8 here in verse 9, notice this, it says, and out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great toward the north and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. This little horn, I won't take time to get into all the specifics of this prophecy with Antiochus Epiphanes and so on, but there is an end time application here, and that's brought out in the booklet, America Under Attack. But it says here in verse 12, and an host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced, and it prospered. So what's brought out in America Under Attack is the fact that there's demons that were around in the first century. I mean the apostles of old encountered them. Read Acts 8 sometime. And then like my father says in AUA, where are those demons today? Because Revelation 12 says that they're not only still in existence, they're confined to this earth. They're right here on this earth, wreaking havoc everywhere that they go. The army of demons, my father writes, is still around. They wrecked the church, and then they moved on to other areas. Now they seek to bring down nations. We watched, and we do this every other year in doctrines class, this movie, I think it was produced back in 2005 or 6. It's titled Called to Be Free. And it's all of these ministers and members of the Worldwide Church of God that are going up in front of the camera and talking about their experiences in coming out of Armstrongism, as they call it. They were awakened spiritually, so they say. I mean, the whole church fell away from the truth. And the Tekachas came in there together with their fellows, the scholars in the tabernacles, and destroyed an entire church. As my father brings out, they had a lot of assistance. These imposters, these insurrectionists, they had a lot of assistance from this demon army spoken of in Daniel 8. They come along and they destroy the church. But then to listen to them as they look back on that history and they talk about how miraculous it was. And they talk in hushed tones like this. It was such a miracle. We had such courageous leaders that dismantled everything that Mr. Armstrong built, that did away with all of the doctrines that Mr. Armstrong taught. The fruits prove that they are sons of destruction. Look at what they did. There were people bragging, well, we went off television, we closed down Ambassador College, we did away with everything, we sold off the campus, and then did who knows what with all of the money, the tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. They made off like bandits, and then they have the gall to get up on video and to talk about how they made so many sacrifices. God says we better not be deceived by words Words are cheap. Look at the actions. Look at the actions or the results of their actions. The fruits, as the Bible says. Daniel 11 and verse 21, well, speaks about this Antiochus, this end time Antiochus, obtaining rule through deceitful lies and flatteries. He comes in sounding like an angel of light. Think Barack Obama in 2008, or even Joe Biden in 2020. I'm not the president of one party or the other party. I'm the president of America. I'm going to bring the parties together. I'm going to unify America. Promises, promises from these career politicians. It's worse than that. They're not politicians. They're communists. It's a Bolshevik revolution. It's a communist takeover of the United States. America under attack. It says biblical prophecy shows that Satan leads both the first spiritual Antiochus and this last political Antiochus. It says, is it possible that he uses the same strategy to weaken physical Israel in between these two attacks? He attacks from the top and then takes the whole nation or the whole church astray. You see Joe Tkach Jr. on this video talking about how, yeah, I'm just a humble, ordinary guy. And my father, when he died in 1995, he charged me with the task of continuing on with this transformation. And that's all that I've done. You know, we deposed some of these individuals during the Mystery of the Ages lawsuit between 1997 and 2003. And boy, they had such a problem with Herbert Armstrong's government, his leadership. Oh, he was a one-man authoritarian, one-man rule. And we had our lawyers put it right back on the Tkaches because they wouldn't have been able to fundamentally transform the worldwide Church of God were it not for the fact of a tremendous abuse of power. They disfellowshipped anyone that would resist. They blotted out anyone with a dissenting voice. Kicked them out of the church. Even as they went about dismantling everything Mr. Armstrong had worked for more than 50 years to raise up and to build. They talk about government abuse even as they carry it out themselves. Guilty of what they accuse others of. Does this sound familiar? I mean, we're seeing it play out right here, right now, in our nations, in the United States of America. Notice verse 12 again in Daniel 8, it says, and an host was given him against the daily sacrifice, or the daily, the work, by reason of transgression. It's because of sin that all of this is happening. You see, it's the sins of our people. It's the sins of our whether you look at it spiritually or nationally, it's the sins of our people that give the devil this massive opening to attack. To attack. And so you have to go deeper than just saying, well, it's the Democrats or it's the communists over here. It's our sins, as Isaiah 1 brings out. I mean, it's every day. We're seeing more and more clearly, aren't we, that the sickness, it really does go from head to toe, from top to bottom. But as far as this attack, it's an attack from the top. We're seeing it now in America. The booklet says this is America Under Attack. Can you detect this evil spiritual influence in our world today? It is a real spiritual power, and it almost mesmerizes people with its lies. This points right back to Revelation 12:9 and the fact that Satan has unmatched powers of deception. Deception and lies. More and more of them are being exposed, as you heard in the opening montage today. I mean, it's harder and harder even for the sycophants. The ones that swooned in the presence of Obama. It's getting harder and harder for them to deny the truth, the undeniable truth, that this current fake illegitimate administration is destroying the United States. It's destroying America. It certainly is. My father writes in Great Again, when he became president, Barack Obama promised his supporters to a radical transformation of the U.S. Mr. Obama is an outspoken critic of the Constitution and has long desired to cast off its restraints. He hates the Constitution. And, of course, we're just seeing his third term play out before our eyes. This is all part of the fundamental transformation. Listen to this clip from, this is MSNBC's Alex Witt over the weekend talking about, I guess, some Russian rep uses the term fake news. And boy, that really triggered this woman. This is clip 13.
Can I just tell you, when you heard or quoted Sergey Lavrov telling you something was fake news, it made me wonder, will we ever forgive Donald Trump for promoting that phrase time and time again and allowing it to now be used widely, easily as a cover for telling lies?
They're never going to be able to forgive Donald Trump because he used the term fake news. And that's unforgivable. This is from an article from a few years ago. I think it's 2017. We went through it at the time. But it says here, in fairness to Trump, his administration has not escalated the conflict with the press to a new level. It has not yet come close to doing what President Obama's administration did in making the act of reporting itself criminal behavior in the case that started in 2009 under the Espionage Act. As we've gone through before, I mean, Obama's people attacked reporters and journalists. They actually went after them, wanted to throw them in jail, prison. Well, because they got this leak over here, or they revealed this leak. During the Trump years, as you know, the DOJ and FBI, those agencies, that was like leak central. And none of them were ever punished. Not even to this day, just a few low-level ones. We're still waiting on John Durham. We'll see. But here is this woman living in a fantasy world saying that she'll never be able to forgive Donald Trump because he used the term fake news. And Barack Obama comes in years before, says, hey, I'm going to fundamentally transform the nation. I'm going to destroy the Constitution. It protects too many liberties. We can't have that in a good communist state. And this woman, the one you just saw, presumably, no problem. No problem with that. No problem with those actions. No problem that her fellow journalists are being spied upon and put in jail by the Obama people. No, it's fake news. You use that term, that's unforgivable. This is just the way the devil operates. Yes, it's kind of like the January 6th. All these protesters that said some things that were very dangerous. We got to put them in jail. Put them in jail. Did they commit acts of violence? Doesn't matter. It could have been. God says you better judge by the results of actions. Forget about the words for a moment. Forget about the smooth-sounding words. Forget about the angel of light and what he says. What's he doing? What's he actually doing? This 2017 piece, it says, at the heart of the case is James Rosen, chief Washington correspondent for Fox News, publishing information about North Korea that he received from a State Department employee. In obtaining a subpoena to access Rosen's phone and computer records, the Justice Department labeled him an aider, abettor, and or co-conspirator. It also described him as a flight risk. Well, he's like a terrorist, James Rosen, because he got a leak, a little bit of an information from someone in the State Department. And that's it. He needs to go to jail, said Obama. It says, branding a reporter that way in court had never been done by the government. Since the case was widely reported, I'm surprised an act that really was unprecedented was overlooked by so many pundits in making their worst ever analyses. Just totally overlooked, dismissed, brushed aside by Alex, what's her name? Alex, the reporter at MSNBC. Was that an unforgivable act? Was that an unforgivable act by the Obama administration? To basically, in court, say that James Rosen is a terrorist And then to get subpoenas and all this so that they can spy on him, track his phone, track his computers. It says here the Obama Justice Department spent 7 years in court trying to force Risen. This is another one. There's the James Rosen case, and then there's Risen. I think he worked for the New York Times. It says here they spent 7 years in court trying to force Risen to reveal his sources in the criminal investigation of a leak. Team Obama took the case all the way to the Supreme Court. You just can't shut down Obama and his people. I mean, he says some smooth-sounding words. I'm not sure. I guess he never did use fake news. He wasn't accessible to the media, certainly not like Donald Trump. All of his press conferences were staged for the most part. All of the reporters picked out in advance. And then, I mean, Joe Biden's taking it to another level of fakery. And yet, the pundits, the talking heads, they have no problem with any of this. They have no problem with Obama's DOJ targeting the media, literally. They have no problem with that. But if you are Donald Trump, if you're the bad orange man and you say fake news, it's unforgivable. Unforgivable. Listen to this from Jonah Goldberg. He says, Trump's power worship of Putin is repugnant and predictable. This is Jonah Goldberg, someone who fancies himself as a conservative, or I guess he, I don't know, maybe he's made the switch like George Will, but he's deranged because of the orange man. It says here, but we already knew who Trump is. It says, from his respect for the Chinese government's slaughter of pro-democracy protesters in Tiananmen Square to the invasion of Ukraine, Trump has long demonstrated his instinctual attraction to brutality and strength. Well, but to paraphrase Bill Maher, if Trump loved Putin so much, why didn't Putin waltz into Ukraine under Trump's watch? Words, words, words. Jonah Goldberg used to be a conservative, but now he's a victim of Trump derangement syndrome. And a lot of them fall into that category. Most just go along. We saw this in the Laodicean era of God's church. Of course, we're still in it. God's raised the ruins through this church. But we saw most people, I don't want to put up a fuss. I don't want to cause a stir. I don't want to confront someone over what I think is false doctrine. I feel like it's not right the way they're doing this. But they are getting up in front of the podium and saying that, well, this is miraculous. This is wonderful. This is liberating. One of the ministers, a former teacher of mine, he got up and talked about how that it's like Jesus came along and sat right next to him and put his arm around him. That's what it was like coming out of Mr. Armstrong's teachings, coming out of Mr. Armstrong's church and into this new way, a complete and total and fundamental transformation that happened in the Worldwide Church of God. He didn't know Jesus, that minister, when Mr. Armstrong was around. But then when the old man finally was pushed aside, when he finally died in 1986, then they discovered Jesus. Then they discovered that Herbert Armstrong was a heretic. Then they discovered that Herbert Armstrong was leading a cult. They said these things in the video. Shame on them. What about the fruits? What about the work? What about the message that went out? What about the millions and millions of people that flocked to the World Tomorrow program when Mr. Armstrong was broadcasting? Or that subscribed to the Plain Truth magazine? None of that matters. All that you need to know is that he was a heretic. And I found Jesus. I discovered Jesus when the Tekachas came along. In fact, it was an attack. Look at the nation of the United States and how the vast majority, even those in the Republican Party, they signed on to the $1.5 trillion monstrosity last week. We've got to do it for Ukraine. We got to do it to secure the Ukraine borders. Even Republicans go along. Bill Barr, he's got a book. Here again, add it to a huge stack of Trump bashing books. So he's out trying to promote himself, trying to promote his book. And of course, trashing Donald Trump. Surprise, surprise. Listen to this from Bill Barr, clip 8.
What do you think was the most alarming or unsettling moment for you in the administration?
It was certainly unsettling when I went in to talk to the president about the election, and he was livid and shaking and, you know, showed a lot of temper and yelling. That was a little unsettling. But the other thing that was actually unsettling is later when I went in to actually give him my letter of resignation, he started talking about how he had actually won the election and how the machines were rigged and that he was actually going to be there for another term. And he was very confident of that. And I just felt this showed a detachment from reality that was stunning to me. He was willing to accept anything, no matter how fanciful, as long as it didn't make him a loser in the election.
He's stunned. He's stunned because Donald Trump was, well, he was upset. He was yelling. He has a temper. He said the election was stolen. He wasn't living in reality. Who's not living in reality? Who's living in a fantasy? It's Bill Barr, sadly. He just goes along with all the others suffering from TDS. He just goes along. There he is saying how shocked he was that Donald Trump would dare contest the election and do it in a manner that shows he was maybe losing his temper. I mean, the words that were coming out of his mouth at that time, it was stunning to me. Let's talk about the actions. Let's talk about what was happening the night of November 3rd, 2020, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, in Arizona. They don't want to talk about that. They don't want to look at that. They don't want to examine the evidence. Certainly not. Just look at the words. He was yelling. Look at the words. This is all they want you to look at. God says we better know, we better even know the spirit behind those that come speaking words. Are they the words of truth? And if not, what's the spirit behind that? This was from, I believe, yesterday, Bill Barr talking about how he knew early on in 2020 that Donald Trump was going to lose the election. Clip 9.
I felt for a long time that he was going to lose the election. I went in April and told him that I thought he was going to lose the election. And he had, that his personal behavior, his obnoxious behavior, was turning off key blocks of voters, and he was going to lose. And on election night, I felt he was going to lose. And I was actually surprised it was as close as it was.
Wow, I saw that this morning, and I just thought about those clips with Wolf Blitzer. Remember those from October of 2020, where he got a little hot under the collar because his forecast was that there was going to be some rampant voter fraud because of the mass mail-in ballot system that had been put in place because of COVID. And now here he is in 2022 saying that I told him he was going to lose because why? He's obnoxious. He's obnoxious. His words aren't always nice. Well, what about his fruits? What about the way that he served as president? What about the inflation numbers or the fact that Putin didn't go into Ukraine? None of that matters. Just consider the words. He's obnoxious. He yells. And I'm here to tell you that, look, I found Jesus. Jesus is on our side. It's a pretty strong parallel between what happened in the final era of God's church and what's happening in our nations today. Out of time, you're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.